time for Gene Shepherd, author, raconteur, and commentator of the contemporary scene. Here's Gene.
Seal of the Genesee Hospital School of Nursing. It's one of my favorite institutions of higher learning. And, you're working, you know, there's all kinds of hobbies. You know, there's guys that collect dollar bills for a hobby. Yes, that's surely a slob hobby. There are those that collect match covers. That's a true loser's hobby. Then there are those that collect cigar butts. I know a guy who has a Winston Churchill cigar butt. The cigar butt actually smoked by Winston Churchill. He has a Groucho Marx cigar butt. He has one from Charlie J. Bullard of 1472 Appomattox Parkway in Roanoke, West Virginia, too. He was a councilman at large there, so he collects all the big ones. So, you know, because I collect, hello, test, because I collect, well, occasionally this signal here fades. Well, there's a reason for it, why it fades. It's a Heath kit, this whole damn outfit. This was one of the first experimental Heath kits that was put together. Yeah, you can buy a Heath kit radio station. Very easy. You know, there's nothing wrong with a Heath kit. It's fine. And if you have a steady hand with a soldering iron, you know, and you got plenty of time, you got a kitchen that has fireproof linoleum, you can really build yourself up a good Heath kit. Although, I'll never forget this friend of mine who decided he was going to build a Heath kit harpsichord. And, by the way, the worst part is he hates music, but he likes building things. So you know, often your basic drives do not coincide with your intellectual desires. However, he built this harpsichord. It's a great big Heath kit harpsichord. Came with a neo vinyl hand-carved 18th century molded cabinet. It was really pretty. And he got this thing all hooked up, and he plugged that son of a gun in, I want to tell you. Lights for miles around dimmed, and, you know, you could hear transformers exploding on poles, and it was the greatest harpsichord sonata, I think, that's ever been played that, you know, just blew hell out of the whole power system. Of course, you got to be careful when you run your systems check after you first build something like that, you know. I could tell you this is an ex-radar man. Oh, yes, yes, radar. You guys see radar in the movies, you know, with the great big disc moving around there, that big parabolic reflector. Well, I spent a lot of time hiding under one of those things at one desperate period in my life, and I can only tell you that that when one of those things goes bad, it takes a repairman not only with a fantastic square wave generator to deal with it, but iron nerves, also a good pair of rubber shoes, because that little mother will ionize you, I'm telling you, quicker than the electric chair at Sing Sing. I'll tell you, it's quicker and much more spectacular. And more than that, nobody ever tries to get you paroled. When you go that way, you go. I mean, G-O. But I don't want to bring up this morbid type stuff on a night like this. You know, by the way, I do have some good news to relate to you. So get ready in there, Mario. Watch for my cue. I'll tell you, I do have some good news to relate to you. That have you noticed that there's been a fantastic rise ever since the Democratic convention here in New York? There's a tremendous rise in the stock of Skippy peanut butter. I repeat that. Listen, this is your stock tip of the week. There's been a tremendous rise in the stock of Skippy peanut butter. Good. Now reset that, because I'm going to use that again. There's been a big rise. Now I thought about this for a while. You know, you're used to AT&T going up or something like a Great Western Motels, one of those great stocks, yeah. And then, of course, there's a whole lot of stocks that have these mysterious names, like Aniotic Radex. You see, it's gone up 3 points. What do they make? Nobody knows. They just make a stock. That's it. There are certain stocks that are free form. I mean, they have nothing to do with any company or product. They have numbers like DLM, Inc. And you buy one of those, and you deserve what you get, as a matter of fact, which is often quite nothing. You don't even often get the stock certificate. But that's there's one born. You know, that's not true. There isn't one born every minute. You've heard that old expression, one born every minute. That was before the population explosion. Of course, this is what P.T. Barnum said back in the 1880s, but now in the 1976 period, there's probably 200 or 300 born every minute. And they're out there ready and ripe for the shucking. Incidentally, somebody asked me, I was sitting there, you know, in the chock full of nuts, and I said to my friend Stan, you know, I said, Stan said, he says, you know, I don't know what the hell's going on with the country. He gets like that when he sits in the chock. And, yeah, you do. After a while, you know, those seats in the chock are especially designed to touch you in very nervous, touchy points of nerve endings. No. Those seats in the chalk are specially scientifically designed. You're supposed to spend exactly 17 minutes enjoying a seven-course meal at the chalk. Because, after all, the name of the game in fast food is fast, not food. The key word is fast. So the turnover, of course, is fantastic. What happens is that if you sit on one of those seats more than 17 minutes, first of all, your left leg falls asleep. Starts out with the left leg, and it slowly creeps up your backbone. And when it finally reaches the brain and you topple over sideways, they just move you out onto 6th Avenue, and that's all there is to it. And so Stan gets moody in the chalk, and I said, what's the matter, Stan? He said, what do you mean, what's the matter? This is the world is going crazy. I said, Stan, that's not true. I mean, if that's assuming, what you're saying, the world is going crazy, that's an assumption you're making, that the world was once sane. What kind of a nutty, you know, this is an arguable idea. I mean, are you trying to tell me the world is less crazy than it was during the days of Genghis Khan? I said, who was that? I said, who was Genghis Khan? I want to tell you. If you think Mr. Bullard at the office is tough, you should have worked for old Khan. He was something else, I'll tell you. They say, though, that he took care of his friends well. It was only his enemies that were in trouble. And Stan thought about that for a minute. He says, you know, I never thought of it that way. He says, you know, everybody keeps saying the world is going crazy, but it really isn't going crazy. It's just the world. I says, Stan, you don't think it's any better on Mars, do you? I mean, you know, with that little machine up there digging holes in the ground. And can you see two Martians? You know, this thing does not take a picture. You understand? If there was an actual moving, walking around creature, it couldn't get a picture of it. You know that, because it's slow scan TV. So there could be 25 guys walking around this thing all the time. We'd never get a picture of it. You know that. It just looks like a plane. But it could be a lot of guys walking around here looking at this. And I can just see two or three of them standing there looking at it. You know, and they've been looking at it for maybe a couple of days now. And one of them says, it's starting to feed. And, you know, it's reaching down into the ground. And he says, you know, that son of a gun eats dirt. He says, well, I'll be damned. And they keep moving around back there. And one says, look at that thing. He says, you know, for years they've been telling us here that something was going to come from outer space and it was going to have antennas all over it. And that thing's got antennas all over it. It's hard to believe. Science fiction is right. Well, you know, you think like that when you're sitting in the chalk, and I'm talking to Stan. I says, you know, Stan, I'll tell you, things aren't as bad as it seems. You know, Skippy peanut butter stock is soaring. He said, why? I said, Stan, why? Jimmy Carter. Peanuts. And he said, no kid. Oh, yes, of course. Carter Peanuts. When Lyndon Johnson was in office, the Stetson Hat Company stock went out of sight. For heaven's sakes, yes. And when Kennedy was in office, all these very fancy hairdo joints for men opened up all over the place with guys named Mr. Chucky. They were giving you a JFK haircut. Of course, I remember that. And no wonder they're coming out with all this peanut butter stuff. And I said, not only that, has it occurred to you? Watch now, I want to sneeze now. Has it occurred to you, I said, Stan, that Jimmy Carter looks exactly like Skippy? Yes, Skippy. Do you know who Skippy was? Yeah, well, that's right. Historical perspective. You think that Skippy peanut butter is named after people jumping rope or something? There was a comic strip character named Skippy. And not only that, there was an actor, I'll ask you a piece of trivia, there was an actor who became a star as a kid. He was like 6 years old when he played it. He played that role twice in great major movies, and he's still around. Who was that actor? He looks just like Skippy. No, it was not Bert Lahr. Huh? Who? Hooper? No, Dennis Hopper you're talking about. No, he played other comic strip characters. Are you talking about Jackie Cooper? Not Coogan, Cooper. Jackie Cooper. Well, do you notice he looks like Jimmy Carter? Well, okay. And the reason that Jackie Cooper played Skippy was that he looked like Skippy. Ah, now it begins to follow. You know, and I thought, well, no wonder he's making it big. Okay, now Carter has a deep subliminal attraction for people. And no, it's not the smile. Oh, many people got smiles. No, not at all. The smile will carry you not past the front door. Any good vacuum cleaner salesman told you that. He can say the smile will not do it. And what is it? Well, it's the overall look of a combination of Skippy and Huck Finn, which are great classical American fictional characters. And no, I'm very serious. And I say that eventually there will be candidates who will remind you vaguely of Tank McNamara. And you'll be pleased. You know, you'll vote for him for that reason, because you like Tank. There will be candidates come along. And, for example, any candidate who has a mother who looks like Mary Worth has got half of the West Virginia delegates right there. And I'm serious. All these characters are very subliminally in our mind, you see. And have you noticed that John Glenn looks almost exactly, I mean, when he had hair, he looks almost exactly like Buck Rogers. That's right. No. Oh, no. John Glenn at his very peak, if you remember John Glenn, he was not fatter. John Glenn weighed about 27 pounds when he was sent out into space. That's because you have a bad memory, buddy. John Glenn looked like Buck Rogers. Now, on the other hand, I think one of the reasons that everybody in this town went totally ape over John Lindsay was because he really, under the right light, just the right light, of course. It had to be the right light coming down. He looked like Flash Gordon playing it straight. Yes, the wavy blonde hair, the high cheekbones, the intrepid-looking eyes. Yes, that's right. And the only thing wrong, his wife did not look like Wilma Deering or Ardala. Hey, listen, speaking the way it's going. And, you know, I have to keep telling my friend Stan, it's going to be all right. I know it's going to be all right when you see stuff like this. On Route 22 the other day, I saw a bumper sticker. You know, bumper stickers really are an interesting gauge of the way the world is going. You know, for a couple of years, bumper stickers were really hopeless. I mean, they were. That was when we were going through our existential mysticism stage. Like a bumper sticker would say, don't blame me. Or impeach everybody. Or, yeah, oh yeah, they said, you know, things like that. Life is not worth living. You know, things of that nature. No. That was a period in history. It's all gone. Although some people don't know it's gone. It is all gone. Now the bumper sticker has taken another turn. I saw a bumper sticker that said, and I quote, "Think polka." Now think about that for a minute. Think polka. And I found that in New York. I mean, in New York, that's incredible. Now this could be a trend. I mean, for example, can't you just see a bumper sticker that says "Think two-step"? I mean, I don't know what the hell you do when you think polka, but I says "Think polka," and I'm driving along there in this fantastic hassle of traffic. I says, "Think polka." I said, "I'll bet 75% of the drivers around here don't even know what a good polka sounds like." One, a two, a one. Joyship, Gewendes Hagetheim. Jo ich det gewinn ich hage Toim, Cornelia Sackertisch. Where you hear this clarinet break? Classical. All right, you guys, set it back there. Eddie's, come on, Stosh. Okay. Now I'm just going to tell you something here that may disturb many of you, but there's a great vast part of America that many of you know absolutely nothing about, and that is the Polka Belt. You've heard of the Bible Belt, and you've heard of the Borscht Circuit, of course. But I suspect that few of you have ever heard of the Polka Belt. Now, the Polka Belt is bounded on the north by Milwaukee. This is Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And it extends to Hegwisch, Illinois. Now, just roll that name over your tongue, Hegwisch. Hegwisch, Illinois is the name of a town that grew. It was right next to the town I was living in as a kid, see? And Hegwisch, of course, they occasionally would overflow into Hammond. And Hegwisch, and every second guy that I knew from the time I was, like 8 months old, was Polish. Yes, that's right. And by the time I was nine, most of my best friends were Polish. And it's the truth. And so since none of us knew anybody was Polish or not, there was just a lot of people, see? So it just so happened that Bolus Rakowski, over at his house, they always ate stuffed cabbage. And we just accepted that, see? When we were at Bolus's house, we all squatted in the basement. Now, all Polish people that I've known live a great deal of their life in the basement. Yes, of course it's true. I wouldn't say it if it isn't true. They spend a lot, and they live in the... Why? I don't know why. It's because they're Polish. They live in the basement. And what they do in the basement is paint the entire basement bright blue. It's a bright Polish blue. It's like a China blue. That's called a Polish blue. And me and Bolus Rakowski, Schwartz, and Geza Niemet would sit in the basement and play pinochle. Now, there isn't, that, by the way, is the Polish national game. And, pinochle is a very serious game. And we had a set of double pinochle cards. You know, double pinochle, when you play double pinochle, you use two decks. And these pinochle cards were worn so much by us kids playing down in Bolus's basement that the cards themselves were about a quarter of an inch thick, each one. And they were rounded on the top. And when you were getting ready to shuffle a double pinochle deck, it was like holding a cantaloupe in your hand. It was round, see? And of course, Bolus, being a great pinochle player, I mean, it's just a national trait. Bolus could remember dumb plays that Schwartz had made, or Flick, or me, or Geza, for like 8 years before. And he'd get mad, see? It's a, you're stupid. You're going to do that again. And it's, again, I never knew. You did that, remember, last summer? And, of course, he remembered every play, every card, and every dumb bid that had ever been made by us sitting in the basement. Well, now, Bolus's mother would walk around. See, she was a Polish lady, and she wore a shawl on her head, and she would walk around and spoke nothing but Polish. She lived in this country for like 100 years and spoke nothing but Polish. And so it got to the point where we would speak. That's all we did. We spoke a pidgin half-baked Polish. And I would come over to... Yes, I still do. So I would come over to Bolus's house, and if he wasn't there, see, she would look out of the door and say, Bolus, not here. And at that point, I would say something to her, and we'd talk. And, of course, being 9 years old, you don't think in terms, gee, I can speak Polish. It was just what I had to say to Mrs. Bolus Rakowski. And, by the way, he had this great brother, Stasz, common Polish name, Stasz. Stasz and Ace is a big name, too. Stasz, Ace, yes, Bolus, better known as Bolek in the actual language. Well, then what we would do, see, when we got through playing Pinochle there, we would drift down the alley and we would go to Geza Niemitz's house. Now, that was Hungarian. And his mother spoke Hungarian. So she would holler down the steps. They were very different kind of a culture, totally different. These were wild gypsy Magyars. I mean, you know, the kind of stuff. Oh, yes, fantastic. I'll never forget the time Mrs. Niemitz got bugged at me. I don't remember what it was about. But you just can't imagine this in the Spock world. This is a mother of a you know, a kid that you're visiting. See, she got really mad at me and hollered at me in Hungarian. Now, at the time, I spoke enough Hungarian to know what she said. And I knew I'd better get the hell out. So I ran across the yard. She made a sudden, quick grab and just peeled my polo shirt off of me the way an orangutan peels a banana. I mean, it's right under the fence I went. Well, you just can't imagine. You know, she was a totally full-passioned lady, much in the style of Anna Magnani. Yes, and Geza, of course, we were always in the basement. In Geza's house, it was a whole different thing, you know. We were eating stuff over there. We were eating stuff like cherry dumplings. You ever had those? Paprika stekos. So, upstairs, they were always yelling back and forth. And the word they yelled constantly was, Tashik! You know what that means? You know. Well, that's your homework for today. You can look that up. Well, so this was, you know, we were all living together. We all knew each other intimately. Absolutely. And, you know, we grew up together, and all of us, and so finally we're going to graduate from high school. Now, in the outside world, none of this ever entered. So when we were in school, Bolus was just like any other high school kid. Absolutely. No, see, it's only in the East that people make a big thing of their ethnic heritage. In most other parts of the country, it's just there. You know, it's like making a big thing of gravity. You don't quite often, you don't walk around daily and say, hey, have you noticed that stuff falls down when you drop it? Well, it's just not like that out there. So anyway, you know, there were all kinds of Lithuanians, Ukrainians, Hungarians, Czechoslovakians, thousands of Swedes, incidentally, and the Norgies. Well, listen, I spoke a pidgin Swedish for a while. I used to go around saying things like glug, svenska pork, and, you know, and sitting around there eating this, pickled herrings and stuff. So, yeah, I was going with a girl whose mother was a Laplander. Now, you know, the idea of New York being a melting pot is a joke. It never, yes, plenty. Yeah, but we hear too much about that, so why should I talk about the obvious? What are you laughing about, Marty? Yes, there were plenty of blacks. Of course. But what's the point of that? See, I'm saying that we know about that. But how many people talk about having Hungarians and Croatians as friends? So this is the way it is in the Midwest, and or at least that part of the country. Now, one day, I'll never forget this sudden realization, though, that underneath it all, cultures really don't mix. Now, it's one of these great human ideas, you know, that they do. But when all is said and done, underneath it all, I don't know. I'm walking down the street. It's 1 week after I've graduated from high school. I remember it vividly because it happened right in the middle of summer. the whole great, glorious, fantastic, strange experience. I'm walking down the street, and here's Bolas coming towards me. Now, me and Bolas, we've been friends since like we were six. Bolas walked down the street, and I'm walking down the street towards him, and I said, "Hey, how are you, Bolas?" Bolas is a great athlete. He really was. And by the way, the national game of many of the people of that area is softball. The softball players of St. Ignatius. I personally used to play constantly against Our Lady of Perpetual Help. Yeah, that's right. And I also played, I'll never forget one night I played for the United Brethren. I was a ringer. I got $25 a game playing for church softball teams, a very fast league, incidentally, at night games. They get about 2,000, 20, maybe sometimes 15,000, 20,000 people those games. They really come. So I played third base one night for the United Brethren. And I never heard of the church. I never went there. But I had one of their jerseys. So I'm playing for the UB one night. And we're playing against the Immaculate Conception. And, it was another game. And talk about a fantastic ball game. We had a fight that broke out at about the sixth inning. And yes, these games often result in that. You know, it was a fantastic fight broke out. And the next thing I know, the crowd is coming in from the stadium. Everything's people are crowding in. And I could hear the sirens coming. And the next day in the paper, there was a headline. It said, United Brethren and Immaculate Conception riot. Three jailed. I like the United Brethren. So I'm walking down the street when Bolas says to me, "Hey," he says, "listen, you coming to my wedding?" I says, "Your wedding? Are you kidding, Bolas?" Bolas, I mean, our little tiny group was a group of total misogynists. There was not one of us that was, you know, interested in the women at that time. We were playing ball and doing the whole thing, soldering stuff together, playing pinochle, and Bolas suddenly announces he's getting married. I said, "Getting married, Bolas? He's a cool 17. I said, "To whom?" He said, "Well, girl named Anna." I said, "Anna?" He said, "Yeah, Anna. She's from East Chicago." I said, "East Chicago? When did you meet her?" He said, "I haven't met her. I haven't met her yet." I says, "What? You're marrying her? You haven't met her?" He says, "Yes, my old man and my mother, they got together and they picked her out. And we're getting married in 2 weeks. Are you coming to the wedding?" I said, "Bolas, you mean you're marrying a girl you never met?" "Well, yeah, yeah." I said, "Oh." At first I thought he was kidding. I walked on down, you know, a couple of hours later I meet Schwartz. I said, "Schwartz, did you hear from Bolas?" And Schwartz has got a stunned look on his face. He says, "Yeah." I said, "He's not kidding, is he?" He says, "No, he ain't." And 2 weeks later, me and Schwartz and Flick attended our first Polish wedding. I'll never forget, the church was rocking for blocks around. They were having this great big wedding thing in the basement. You could just feel the whole neighborhood going up and down. And I went down into the basement where they were having this giant feast, and they had enormous tables set up with hams and pickles and great big jugs of Polish wine, and the band was playing in a corner. And there was this girl dancing around with Bolas. She's got this white dress on, a long white wedding gown with dollar bills pinned all over her. I said, "My God, what's Bolas doing?" This wedding went on for maybe 2 or 3 weeks. Me and Schwartz and Flick hung around and drank the stuff. Ate the ham, the stuffed cabbage. Bolas was wearing a black suit with a big black tie on. He came over and he's very serious now. He says, "Good evening, fellows." I said, "How are you, Bolas?" He said, "It's good to see you fellows here. Have you met my wife, Anna?" I said, "Yeah, hi, Anna." She says, "Good evening." And they went out on the floor and they danced some more. So I pinned a dollar on her, the only dollar I had. I danced a while and left. Yeah, I know. Just bring it in together. If you didn't understand both of them, all right? But I have to explain it out of here, for God's sake. All right. You worry so much. Yeah, worrying, though, will spoil the show sometime. Bring it up. There you go. Hate to do that on the air. Oh, well. yes, there you go. So you see, you know, maybe Kipling was right. From that time on, we never saw Bolas. Oh, he was gone. He got this house, had these kids, painted his own basement blue. Never saw him again. That was the end of it. You see, I've been there.
Listening to Gene Shepherd, author, raconteur, and commentator on a contemporary scene.